I'm going to try and speak softly this morning. My annual flu and laryngitis. But if I say it was, somebody will believe me that it was an act of great Mesiras Nefesh that I came out this morning for my students. You understand? My students. Anyway, the shiur for this morning is a shiur that I have said different parts of it at different times, and I want to put them all together now into one major shiur, and I just hope that I will be able to succeed in completing the shiur. I have to. First, Rashi and Chumash. How many times have I spoken about the first Rashi in Chumash? Here we are, we're back to the first Rashi. And there you have the Rashi in front of you, Omer Rav Yitzchak. Rav Yitzchak said, Lo hoyo tzorek lahatkim et hachot et hatora elo me'achodesh hazel achem shehi mitzvah rishonah shenitzvahu bo Yisrael. Torah should have begun with Hakodesh Hazelochem. This month shall be unto you the first of months, which is the first mitzvah that Jews were commanded. Maybe not so incidentally, Hakodesh Hazelochem appears in this week's Sedra. Parshat Bo. God speaks to Moshe and Aaron in Egypt, and he tells them, you understand, the first communication from God to the Jewish people who've been enslaved and persecuted and tortured, and Jewish children have been cast into the Nile. The great first message of God to the Jewish people is, HaKodesh HaZolachem, this month shall be unto you the first of months. If I sounded a little sarcastic as I said that, that's exactly what I had in mind. I don't understand. My question, different than Rashi's question. Rashi, the first Rashi asks, why did Torah begin with the story of creation? It should have begun with the first mitzvah, which is, this month, Nisan, shall be unto you the first of months. And Rashi goes on to tell us that the reason why Torah told us the story of creation is in order to make known to us the fact God created the world. It all belongs to him. He has the right to give lands to whomever he chooses. He gave Eretz Canaan to the Canaanite tribes, and then he took it from them and he gave it to us. So if nations of the world ever taunt us and complain that we stole Eretz Israel, our response is, listen, the world belongs to God. He created it. He gave it to them. He took it from them, and he gave it to us. Now, usually, of course, when I quote this Rashi, it becomes a highly charged shiur of, you know, every bit of this land belongs to us, from the Golan down to Sinai. But that's not going to be today. Today, I want to ask another question. The flip side of the Rashi. Rashi asks, why does Torah begin with Bereshis? I want to ask, why is the first mitzvah that God gives to the Jewish people the mitzvah of HaKodesh HaZalachem? This month shall be the first mitzvah, the first month. What is HaKodesh HaZalachem? What is it? That the Jewish calendar, it goes according to the moon, Chodesh, because the moon renews itself. And most probably he has to tell them that the moon makes a revolution around the earth every 29 days, 12 hours, and 793 parts of an hour. You understand? My question is, couldn't God have come up with something more inspiring to tell the Jewish people? His first communication to a people persecuted, downtrodden, is HaKodesh HaZolachem. Give me a break. Maybe the Rebbe should have said to them, Shema Yisrael HaShem Elokeinu
Asher Echad. You have to Reacho Chumalcha.
I don't know. Maybe even more powerful would have been if the Kohen Shoda said, Oh, Dovinu Chai.
Am Yisrael Chai. I'm going to take you out of here
and you're going to be a great nation. But what point is it? First communication of God to the Jewish people. They never heard anything from him directly. This is it. This comes from to Moshe and Aaron to tell them. I would have felt a little let down. I would have expected some kind of a fiery message of salvation. We've gone out to freedom. And the first mitzvah is Achodesh Azalachem. I think it's a very good question. It's an exceptional question. And this question is going to need a very good answer.
So, we'll begin. We'll begin with the answers.
And there are going to be a number of them. And then, of course, there's going to be what I consider the most significant of them all. Incidentally, we once pointed out in a shiur, you know who truly understood the significance of Rosh Chodesh? The Greeks. The Greeks are the ones who legislated against Rosh Chodesh. The Chashmonaim, who waged war with the Greeks, because the Greeks had legislated against Chodesh, Milah, and Shabbos, Chashmonaim, Chodesh, Shabbos, Milah, Chet, Shin, Mem. And the same question bothered me. What did the poor Greeks want for Rosh Chodesh? I mean, Rosh Chodesh is a minor holiday. Not only it's a minor holiday, we thank our lucky stars if we remember to say Yalav Yavo. You understand? We remember to say Yalav Yavo and we don't have to say Shemona Esrei over again, then we have celebrated Rosh Chodesh. What did the Greeks want from Rosh Chodesh? So there are a number of answers that I'm going to give briefly because the bulk of our time has to be with the answer that's going to bring us to the real significance of HaKodesh HaZolachem as the first mitzvah that's given to the Jewish people. On the second side, you have a Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvahs. I'm not going to read all of it. I'm just going to deal with those sentences that are underlined. And I'll give you the general gist of his words. This is the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvahs on the mitzvah of Kiddush HaKodesh, sanctifying the new moon. By the way, in the mitzvah of Kiddush HaKodesh, there are two mitzvahs. One mitzvah is that our calendar is according to the moon. We have months, 12 months, lunar months, and that Rosh Chodesh is established by virtue of the fact that there are witnesses who come to Sanhedrin and say we saw the new moon, and Sanhedrin is Mekadesh, sanctifies the new moon. And also in this mitzvah is the idea that Nisan is the first of months, which is also something we're going to have to deal with, because that's a little bit strange. The year changes in Tishrei, and the first of months is Nisan. Can you imagine? Happy New Year on January 1st, and then July 1st, July is the first of months. Doesn't make sense. What's it all about? What is it all about? The Rambam says the following. The Yeshkan Yisod Godol Ma'od. In this halachic, astronomic, mathematical calculation, there is a great foundation, one of the foundations of our faith. Shalom yedohu V'lo yargishu bo elo ha-ma'amikim cheke. It will not be known, nor will it even be felt, except by those people who study it in depth. And the Rambam is going to introduce us to this very deep fundamental principle in the whole halacha of Kiddush HaKodesh. Haidu, which is the following. Zeshon Chashim Hayom Lechutz Laretz. The fact that we calculate in Chutz Laretz, B'Seidra Ibur, according to the calculations, Shebi Yodenu, the calculations that we have, we say that this day is Rosh Chodesh, and this day is Yontif. Under no circumstances has it anything to do with our calculation. We come out, let's say we're in Chutz Laretz, I don't remember who's, most probably every yeshiva sent their calendar. I don't know if my shevet sent calendars only, or those were only Haggadahs. All right? Or Maxwell House Coffee. Maxwell House Coffee was Haggadahs. Okay. So the Rambam says all the calculations that we have in Chutz Laretz are absolutely meaningless, and that's not why we know when Rosh Chodesh is. Ela, mipnei shebet din shebe'eretz Yisrael, kvar kovu yom ze chag o Rosh Chodesh. That's what we need to know in this paragraph. You know why a day is Rosh Chodesh or it's Yom Tov? Because way back then, in the 4th century, there was a Bet Din in Eretz Yisrael that made the calculation for all time. And they said that in Tavshin Samach Talad, Shabbos is going to be Rosh Chodesh Shvat. Now, go to the next place where it's underlined. V'inim osif l'chot pibur, I'm going to add explanation because I can see this is a little difficult for you to grasp. So I'm going to add explanation. And here comes one of the most unusual sentences in all of the writings of the Rambam. Ilu hinachnu derech mashal. Or ilu hinachnu lemashal. If we would assume, for example, shebnei Eretz Yisrael ye'odru me'Eretz Yisrael. If we're going to assume that there are no Jews in Eretz Yisrael, there's an absolute, a total and complete absence of Jews from Eretz Yisrael. Now the Rambam is going to go on a line further and say that if there's an absolute absence of Jews from Eretz Yisrael, the calendar and the calculations are all meaningless, we're finished. The power and the strength of the Jewish calendar is only if there are Jews in Eretz Yisrael. Otherwise we're finished. We don't know Rosh Chodesh, we don't know Pesach, we don't know Shavuos, we don't know Sukkot, we're finished. It's all over. Now the Rambam had to set up this hypothetical case because he wants to tell you that our calendar depends completely on the Jewish presence in Eretz Yisrael. One Jew. Chatam Sofer explains that when the Rambam started writing a sentence where he is positing the possibility that there were no Jews left in Eretz Yisrael, he makes a parenthetic comment unparalleled in all of his writings. Ilu hinachnu l'moshel shebnei Eretz Yisrael ye'odru me'Eretz Yisrael, if we would assume, for example, that there were no Jews in Eretz Yisrael, Cholila lokel me'asol zol, God forbid that he should ever do this. L'fisha kvar hiftiach, he has already promised and guaranteed, shalom yimocha, that they will not be erased, lo yishodesh, and they shall not be uprooted, et she'edit ha'umo legambi. He has already guaranteed that he's not going to uproot the remnants of his people. What's the Rambam getting so shook up about? You know why? Because the Rambam holds la'alacha, if there are no Jews in Eretz Yisrael, the calendar and all the calculations are meaningless. That means we're finished. It's all over. If there's a total absence of Jews from Eretz Yisrael, between the colonial soil has ended. What a powerful roundup. What a powerful roundup. So he says, because our whole calendar depends on the presence of a Jew in Eretz Yisrael. That's all. It could only have been established by a Sanhedrin in Eretz Yisrael. The Sanhedrin or events in any place else in the world cannot establish Rosh Chodesh. Out of the question. Nor the calculation. Nothing. An extremely powerful Rambam. So you know what the Rambam is saying? The Rambam is therefore saying that when God gives this first mitzvah to the Jewish people, the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, you know what he's telling them? He's telling them that one of these days I'm going to bring you to Eretz Yisrael. And from the moment that I bring you to Eretz Yisrael, there will be absolutely uninterrupted Jewish presence in the land. I will never destroy you. And the destruction of Klal Yisrael is the absence of Jews in Eretz Yisrael. Which means, of course, if you want to take the Rambam one step further, if there are 50 million frugal Jews in America, but there isn't a single Jew left in Eretz Yisrael, we're finished. If there are 50 million frugal Jews in America, and Yossi Sabid is in Eretz Yisrael, that's the clear statement that's being made by the Rambam. Clear statement being made by the Rambam. Jewish survival depends on uninterrupted Jewish presence in Eretz Yisrael. Now, if that's part of the message of Kiddush HaKodesh, then there is a certain significance to this being the first mitzvah, but that we're going to build that up. Second, do you know what Rosh Chodesh means? Rosh Chodesh always means to clog your soil, and it has to be understood that way. And there were almost probably 700 or 800 years in which it was clear that way. After the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, after the return of Jews to Eretz Yisrael, you have the Anshei Kesef HaGdolah. There is again a Sanhedrin in Yerushalayim. There are 3-4 million Jews living in Bavel. Where can you establish the new moon? By the Sanhedrin in Yerushalayim. How did they know about it in Chutz Laretz? So the Mishnah, the famous Mishnah, the Sefer Rosh Hashanah, says, Borishono hayu masiim lasua. At the beginning, they would have torches. There would be people waiting on all of the hilltops across Yehudah, the Shomron, Gilad, all the way through Syria, through Mesopotamia, until Bavel. And on the 30th day of the month, they waited to see the torch that would be raised from Har HaZeisim. And in quick succession, each mountain, the people standing on a mountain, would light a torch. I always describe, it's in two ways I describe this. First of all, can you imagine what went on in Bavel at the last day of the month? People would be walking in the streets, looking westward. Anything come yet? Anything come yet? Any message from Yerushalayim? There's 10 Jews in Bavel. 4 million Jews are waiting for a message from Yerushalayim. I mean, it's extremely important. They gotta know when the Seder is gonna be, you understand? This is very significant. They have to know when Yom Kippur is gonna be. Can you imagine 4 million people with their eyes turned westward to Eretz Yisrael? The Medrash even describes, the Gemara describes that when the torches would be lit and it would finally arrive in Bavel, it most probably didn't take more than minutes. Hoyokol echod v'echod ola al gavo, everybody in Bavel would go to their rooftops and light torches V'hayokol hagolo lefanav, a person would see the entire exile before him, kibdurat esh, one great burst of fire. Tens of thousands of Jewish homes. We got the message from Yerushalayim. Do you understand what a relationship that created between Yerushalayim and Chutz La'aretz? I always use as an example of this, but I think the example is so old, I don't know anymore. It must have been about 30 years ago. I was living in West Hempstead, getting ready to run out of the house. We have to go to teach, and I took my daughters with me to school, and usually I was always late, but I didn't have a good reason. But this morning, you understand, my wife's phone rings, she answers the phone, and she says, you have a phone call from Yerushalayim. God, was I thrilled? A phone call from Yerushalayim. I get onto the phone, and we go through all the silly stuff like, you sound like you're next door. This is amazing. What a connection. And I'm all thrilled. I never got a call from Yerushalayim. For 600-700 years in Bavel, Jews got a message from Yerushalayim every month, month by month, they got the message. So Kiddush HaChodesh established centrality, not only of Eretz Yisrael, but the centrality of Yerushalayim. Kiddush HaChodesh created the bond between the diaspora and Eretz Yisrael, those two great communities. Together. Maybe the most important aspect of Kiddush HaChodesh was that month after month after month, do you know what was re-established in the minds and hearts of Klal Yisrael? That there's one halachic authority, the Sanhedrin. Those who carry the Mesorah of the Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral law, not everybody can put out a shingle as a posek. Not everybody can go ahead and create his own brand of Judaism. One, Sanhedrin, Torah Sheba'al Peh. These we've talked about in the past, so already, what we have already. The mitzvah already is no longer simply a mitzvah of some kind of a mathematical calculation. Klal Yisrael learning a great deal, and who are the ones that tell them this mitzvah in this week, etc.? Moshe and Aaron are the ones who tell them about the mitzvah, and they're learning that this mitzvah is dependent completely on Sanhedrin, those who carry the Torah Sheba'al Peh from generation to generation. Not everybody can go ahead and do their own thing. You can't do your own thing. Alright, now we're going to the next step. Next step is the following. In the Sefer Rosh Hashanah, the first mission in the Sefer Rosh Hashanah says that there are all sorts of different new years. Rosh Hashanah. Tishrei, the month of Tishrei, is the Rosh Hashanah for kings. We'll see what that means. For Shemitah, for Yovel, those mitzvahs depend on Tishrei. The mitzvah begins, a Shemitah year begins on the first of Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is the beginning of the year for din, for judgment. All the agricultural year in great measure depends on Tishrei. Nisan is Rosh Hashanah, the month of Nisan is Rosh Hashanah, Lemalchei Yisrael. The kings of Israel are anointed, and whenever they're anointed, if a king assumes the throne on Purim and 2 weeks later is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, we begin to count the second year of King David or Shlomo. The year changes in Nisan.
There's a great deal to be said about this, but I'm going to condense it. Tishrei represents natural year, agricultural year, a year that follows, in a sense, the laws of nature. The Gemara says, Malchei Umot HaOlam, the kings of the nations of the world, according to our calculation, their year begins and ends in Tishrei. But the kings of Israel, their year begins in Nisan. And I'm going to explain the significance of this. One Gemara. Number two. And with this, we're going to see what happens in Parashat Bo, what happens in this week's Sefer. That's absolutely revolutionary, mamish revolutionary. Number two, I have a Gemara in Pesachim. The Gemara in Pesachim says the following. Sefer Bamidbar begins in the second month of the second year in the desert, the month of Iyar. Moshe is told to count the Jewish people. That's the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. You have Parashat Bamidbar, you have Parashat Noso, and then in the middle of Bar-Alotcha, you have the Parsha of Korban Pesach. Now, Korban Pesach took place the month before, in Nisan, which means the two Parshiot are not in order. Sefer Bamidbar should have begun in the month of Nisan. Tell us about the Korban Pesach that they brought in the second year of the desert, and then move to Chodesh Iyar when God tells Moshe and Aaron to count the Jewish people. So the Gemara says, "V'nichtol b'reisha the Chodesh Rishon." Let the Torah write the incident of the first month first. V'nichtol the Chodesh Sheni. Then write the incident of the second month. Why is the order reversed? Omar Rav Menashe bar Taklifa Mishmei de Rav. Rav Menashe bar Taklifa, the name of Rav. And you're going to hear something that you've heard quite often. But when you take a look at it in the text of the Gemara, I mean, there was one day, some years ago, that it just blew my mind. Rabbi Nasha bar Taklifa says, in the name of Rav, Zoto Meret, this tells us, Ein Mokdom Umu'uchav HaTorah. The Torah is not written in chronological order. There's no former and latter in Torah. Unbelievable. Makes no sense. Let me ask you, does Torah begin with the death of Moshe, or does Torah begin with creation? From creation, does Torah go to Adam, Noach, Shemes, Enosh, Kenan, Mahalalel, Yared, Hanoch, Lemech, and then you mix in the love, you would know the difference. And then Noah to Avram. Avram gets it. Could you tell me that Torah is not in chronological order? What are you talking about? Of course the Torah is in chronological order. You know what the Gemara's question is? The Gemara's question is that they find one place where it's not in chronological order. So how can the Gemara answer, Zot Omeret, this comes to tell me, Ein Mokdom Umu'uchar HaTorah, a broad statement. There's no former and latter in Torah. You know what the Gemara should have said? The fact is that Torah always follows in chronological order. What do you think? It's one mass of information that doesn't have rhyme nor reason to it? Of course it's a chronological order. Here, there was a particular reason why God changed the order. And the fact is that the Gemara does give reasons why God changed the order. One of them, for example, is that they didn't want to begin Sefer Bamidbar with the story of Pesach that was made in the second year, because the end was that they were going to remain another 38 years in the Midbar when they won't bring the Korban Pesach. Which means telling us that story would be beginning Sefer Bamidbar with something which was uncomplimentary to the Jewish people. So Shashtil, we put the story
of that Korban Pesach in Parshat Talmud. We're going to have to begin Sefer Bamidbar. So how does the Gemara say? Amar of Menashe bar Tachlif Mishmei Gram Zot Omeret. This comes to tell me there is no chronological order to Torah. Of course, there's chronological order to Torah. So we have to understand the Gemara. Ultimately, my explanation of the Gemara is going to be my own, but I like it. There may even be truth to it. What happens as a result of this first mitzvah that's communicated to the Jewish people? HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodesh. This month, Nisan, is the first of months. And we ask, what do you mean? The year begins in January and the first month is July. The year begins in Tishrei and the first month is Nisan. I say what happened in the month of Nisan was so revolutionary, so dramatic, that Nisan had to become the first of months for the Jewish people. Tishrei represents normal history of the nations of the world, which by nature is chronological. Everything follows as a result of cause and effect. A causes B, B causes C, etc. 1, 2, 3. I remember in Torah Vadas in high school, I had one teacher, he wanted that we should know Be'al Peh, all of the causes of the French Revolution. The way he said it was unbelievable. He rolled every R in French Revolution. And we had to know all the causes. And then of course, we thought we were part and we finished the French Revolution, then we come to the First World War. Did we have to know all of the causes of the First World War? History moves in a linear manner, chronological, cause and effect. The history of every nation on the face of this earth, except one. Jewish history is not chronological. And I usually explain this with the following example. The Jews receive Torah at Sinai because they went out of Egypt? Or did they go out of Egypt in order to receive Torah at Sinai? In other words, what happened is the following. God took the Jewish people out of Egypt and then he has 3 million people on his hands. All right, so how long can you have them going on desert buggies and, what are you going to keep them busy with, three? Oh, I got a good idea. We'll bring them to Sinai, we'll give them Torah. Or was it calculated? They were taken out of Egypt in order to arrive at Sinai. So of course God says to Moshe, the snare, the Zelach Ha'od, this is your sign. When I take them out, they will serve God on this mountain. Do you understand what a revolution that is? Do you know what the revolution is? The revolution is that a former event is the result of a latter event. What dictates today? What's going to be tomorrow? That's precisely the opposite of all history. All history is what happens today determines tomorrow. Not in Jewish history. What God has destined for the Jewish people tomorrow is what determines today. This is a complete revolution in thought. Jewish history is not chronological. It doesn't work by cause and effect. If it would work by cause and effect, we would have disappeared from the face of this earth 2,000 or 3,000 years ago. But no, Jewish history is not chronological or linear. Jewish history is goal-oriented. There are goals. God has established the goals in Torah. They've been elaborated on prophets. We knew 2,000 years ago what was going to happen today. It was all foretold. Jews in their masses came back to Eretz Israel because that's what it said in Torah. All of the latter events, everything that happens now, is the result of a goal and an objective that was set by the Danish Lady 3,000 years ago. It's a whole revolution of thought. It means that you cannot study Jewish history in the same categories as you would study all other history. By all other history, you could come along and say, there's a serious demographic problem. We're going to become a minority in this country. All that Mahmoud is going to be democratically elected prime minister in the state of Israel. So I'm telling you, lo hoyo v'lo nivra, it never was, it never will be. The nevuas for Klal Yisrael tell a completely different story. You can attempt to be a false prophet of doom and it means nothing. It may be true in other countries of the world that they will be overrun demographically. It's just not going to happen here. Not going to happen. Don't worry. Don't worry. Don't let anybody get you excited about it. We have to move out of Yehuda, Shomron, and Asa. We have to all gather around in Haranoth, you understand, and put the covered wagons around. And then we'll keep the demography in proper balance. The Gemara in Masechta Megillah. Achar HaDvarim Ba'ela. The third chapter of Megillat Esther begins by saying, Achar HaDvarim Ba'ela, after these things. Let me remind you what it says there. After these things, Haman was raised and uplifted to a great position by Ahasuerus. The Gemara asks, Achar, after what? What happened at the end of chapter 2? The end of chapter 2 is there was a plot by Bigson HaSeresh to assassinate Ahasuerus, and the plot was uncovered by Mordechai, and Ahasuerus was saved. The Gemara goes on, but the Gemara says, Achar nai, after what? And the Gemara says the following. This is an unbelievable statement by Rava that is absolutely the touchstone of Jewish history. Amar Rava, Rava said, Achar shebara HaKadosh Baruch Hu refu l'marka, after God had created already the healing, the remedy for the affliction, that's when Haman is able to rise to power. Haman rises to power only after all of the ingredients that are necessary to save the Jewish people are already in place. We have Esther's queen. In the book of Chronicles, it already says that Mordechai had saved the life of Ahasuerus. There are a lot of other events in chapters 1 and 2 that really set the stage, ultimately, for the salvation of the Jewish people. The Amar Reish Lakish, because Reish Lakish said, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Makeh Yisrael Elohim Kein Borei Lehem Refuah Tchila. The Holy One, blessed be He, does not strike the Jewish people unless He has prepared the Refuah in advance. Do you know what that means? Does Jewish history work chronologically? If it works chronologically, then after the Makkah, then the Refuah should be prepared. But no. The Refuah is in place even before the Makkah comes. And he brings a pasuk in Hosea, Kirafi li Yisrael, as I have healed Yisrael, the Niglo Avon Ephraim, the sin of Ephraim becomes known. Kirafi li Yisrael means God is saying, after I have prepared the Refuah for Yisrael, then they sin. But I had everything prepared in advance. But nations of the world are not like that. Makotam, he strikes them, and afterwards he creates the remedy. Shenama, V'nogaf Hashem et Mitzrayim nogof v'ravdo. God strikes and he heals. You know what that means? It means that the Megillat Esther, Megillat Esther, we think chapter 3 comes after chapter 1 and 2, right? The fact is that chapter 1 and 2, their real place is going to be after chapter 6 and 7. Because in the normal order of things, first, Haman rises to power, the evil decree against the Jewish people, and then we have to find some way of getting Esther into the house of the king and all the rest. That's not the way it works, because Jewish history is qualitatively different than the history of the nations of the world. Our history is not chronological nor linear. Our history is dominated by goal. The nation has a goal. And we're going to reach the goal regardless of what it may look like in the field. It doesn't make any difference. The greatest example, and this is why I love this, I've said this a number of times in the past. Hipil pur hu ha-golo. Haman threw lots. So the Gemara says, when the lot came out in the month of Adar, Samach Simcha Gedola, Haman was very happy. Why? Because that was the month in which Moshe Rabbeinu died. Tana, Kivan Shemachal Pur, the Chodesh Adar, Samach Simcha Gedola, he was very happy. Omar, he said, Nafali Pur, Behera Shemek Bo Moshe. That's a bad month for them. Velo Haya Yodea. And he didn't know, Shem Shiva Ba'adah made Moshe, made Uba Shiva Ba'adah Nolan, on the 7th of Adar he died, and the 7th of Adar was born. And I remember asking you, read that sentence over again, read the sentence over again. Is that the way it works? Shouldn't the Gemara have said, he didn't know that on the 7th of Adar Moshe was born, and the 7th of Adar he died? Oh no, the Gemara is absolutely right. The fact is that Haman knew that Moshe Rabbeinu was born on Zion Adar. He knew. How did he know that Moshe died on Zion Adar? How did he know that? Most probably, whoever was in charge of his Jewish desk. I don't know Dennis Ross. I don't know who's in charge now. Whoever was in charge of the Jewish desk told him, hey, that's the month that Moshe died, okay? All right? But you know, he was born. He was born on Zion Adar. Isn't that interesting? He was born on Zion Adar and he died on Zion Adar. Haman knew both dates. The only thing that Haman didn't know is that as far as Moshe Rabbeinu, death doesn't apply. You know what he thought? He thought that Jewish history is just like world history. You're born, and you die, and it's over. You know what he didn't know? That on the 7th of Adar, the day on which Moshe died, is the day on which he was born for eternity. It's not chronological or linear. That self-same day, the day on which Moshe Rabbeinu died, is the day on which he was born for all eternity. Now the fact is that great historians didn't know this. The great historian of the 20th century, you know, the last century. I remember talking about this, you know, the great historian of our century, the Shanishtawa century, Baruch Hashem is Einstein, the Naha century, okay? The great historian of the 20th century was Arnold Toynbee, who wrote 14 volumes, I believe, the history of the story of civilization. And then his great accomplishment was that he traced 21 different civilizations and found that there was an amazing pattern. I mean, there are all sorts of civilizations that we never heard of, that he studied them and he traced them and he followed them, and we wouldn't know the difference anyway. He could have made them up. It doesn't make any difference. But here there's an Akkadian and a Ugaritic and an Egyptian. There are all sorts of civilizations, and they all follow the same pattern. There's the struggle and the difficulty of infancy, the struggle to survive, and then the beginning of the rise to power. Then comes conquest. Then comes great strength and great power. And then someplace at the peak, begins the deterioration, the decline. There are all sorts of things that begin to happen. And before you know it, you know what that really happens? Disintegration and disappearance from the face of this earth. It happened to 21 civilizations, but it didn't happen to one. And that was Arnold Toynbee's serious problem. The Jews don't fit the pattern. They don't fit the pattern. So, what Toynbee was mechadish the pattern? So he therefore decided that the fact is that the Jewish civilization ended about 2,000 years ago. But every civilization leaves fossils, relics. The Jews that you see in the world scampering around today are a bunch of fossils, the leftovers of a previous civilization. Now, he got away with this great theory until May 14th or 15th, 1948, because then all of a sudden, for the first time in history, we have no record of a fossil creating a state. And it's these fossils, the fossils that they established the state, which therefore caused Toynbee, he could have gotten out of it very easily by saying, there's a rule that was followed by 21 civilizations, good little boys, you understand? The Egyptians went, the Greeks went, the Romans went, the Persians went, the Assyrians went, they all disappeared just the way I said they should, okay? One didn't. So you know, sometimes the exception to the rule is that which proves the rule. That's one way he could have said. He could even had studied Jewish history a little more closely, and must probably knew Jewish history very well, and said, you know, they're a real exception to history. They're an exception to history. They're an exceptional people. But that's a little bit too much to expect of him. So what he did was, his problem is the Jewish state. He became an enemy of the Jewish state. And one of the places where he first expressed it was with regard to Har Nof. That's right, with regard to Har Nof. Because he said that in Deir Yassin, Har Nof is built on the ruins of Deir Yassin, he said, what the Nazis did to the Jews did to the Arabs. That was his great accomplishment in history. I'm not going to go into the whole story. There's a whole story that of a great man, Yaakov Herzog, who was the ambassador to Canada in Ottawa, and Toynbee had come to lecture in McGill University, and Toynbee was 71, 72, Herzog was 38, and he challenged him to a debate in 48 hours in McGill, and Toynbee accepted the Montreal of Canada was waiting. All of Canada was waiting. Here's this 38-year-old Israeli ambassador who's going to debate the great scientist, the great historian. Anyway, that's one of the great debates of all time. Great debates of all time. Halfway through the debate, this poor guy, Toynbee, was just babbling like a fool. All right, yes, all right, you know, it was unbelievable. he took 20 and helped them to listen a shticker. And then they say, he says, that he and his staff were up 48 hours straight, researching all Jewish history in order to be able to the paper 20. Do you know what Toynbee didn't understand? He didn't understand precisely what Haman didn't understand. Ein mukdam u'meuchar b'Torah. Do you know how I'm learning Ein mukdam u'meuchar b'Torah? Jewish history does not follow according to latter and former. Doesn't work that way. That's what the Gemara means. Of course, Torah is in chronological order. But when Torah is talking about Jewish history and its meaning and its significance, make no mistake, there is no former and latter. There are no causes. Everything has been clearly stated in Torah and Nevi'im. We know exactly what the end is going to be. We know that every part of this country is going to be ours. We know that all Jews, even those who are still reluctant to think about Aliyah, are going to get here. We know it all. Because it was clearly stated so by the Nevi'im. The events of today have been foreseen, foretold. The latter, what's supposed to happen at the end, determines what happens today. We don't always see it. That's our problem. If we could see how everything is working toward the ultimate great historic end, and I don't mean end, say, or beginning of Jewish history, if we could only see it, we'd feel a little better. Every time that what seems to be another drawback or another loss, because we can't see, but we have to know. Ein mukdam u'meuchar b'Torah. Haman didn't see it. Toynbee didn't see it. That final Gemara over there, Masechta the Megillah, is a Gemara that says, Omar is flakish. Golem v'yadol is named Shomar v'ahoyt ha'olam. It was revealed and clearly known in advance by God. She also said, Haman lishkol shkolam ha'yisrael. That Haman was going to raid Mount Shkolim in order to buy the right to destroy the Jewish people. So you know what happened? Lefichach higdim shikleim l'shikolav. He gave us the mitzvah and Torah to give a machatzit ha'shekel. And that was 1,000 years before Haman, Jews were fulfilling the mitzvah of machatzit ha'shekel. So what determined the mitzvah of machatzit ha'shekel? What's going to happen later in history? This is cause and effect. It's not cause and effect. There's a plan. There's a divine plan. And the divine plan is in place. I would say that most probably it's precisely the whole message of Purim and Megillat Esther. V'nah hafoch hu. Jewish history is the opposite of the history of any other people on the face of this earth. No other people has yet been able to rise again after it had disappeared. After it disappeared. The fall of the Roman Empire was the end of Rome. The fall of the Greek Empire was the end of Greece. Neither Rome nor Greece have accomplished anything great in all of these years. Nothing. Assyria is gone. Babylon is gone. Finished. Because they followed the pattern. And I say not Toynbee's pattern, but the pattern of the Rebbein Shalom, which is that the history of the nations of the world, Malchei Umot Ha'olam, the kings of the nations of the world, their year is established in Tishrei, because Tishrei is the agricultural year. Agriculture follows. Cause and effect. You're not going to plant, nothing's going to grow. You have to plow, you have to plant, you have to water, and then you can harvest. That's Tishrei. It means, therefore, it means as
well, therefore, and just another few thoughts that I'm going to say briefly. So what's Purim? Purim, we said, is the story of the Nahafohu. It's exactly the opposite. Not the former and the latter. The latter, oh boy, the latter dictates the former. Famous Talmud Rushani. How does tshuva work? How does tshuva work? A person committed a terrible sin. Then he stands up before God and says, God, I'm sorry. I got it, you know. I made a mistake, I'm sorry, you know, I won't do it again, okay? But you did it. You did it. It was done. You did something terrible. How does tshuva work? How does it work? How can you undo the past? You did it. Do you know when you can't undo a sin? If everything works chronologically. But what happens if, as a result of this tshuva, this man's relationship to God is going to be that more intense and that greater? You know what it means? HaKodesh HaZelachem Rosh Chodoshim Rishon Gulachem. This month is the first of months. It's on to you. The Gemara says, time is in your hands. You're not in the hands of God. The mitzvah of Kiddush HaKodesh is, we are the balabatim on time. Time is not our balabas. Which means, therefore, as the Talmud says, wisdom was asked, what should happen to a person who sinned? And wisdom's response was, the evil that a person did shall pursue him unto the end. They asked prophecy, what should happen to a person who sinned? And prophecy said, the one who sins shall die. They asked Torah, what should a sinner do? And Torah said, let him bring a sacrifice. And then they asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. And he said, Yaseh Tshuva. He should do tshuva, because the only one who can say do tshuva is the one who himself lives above time. If you live above time and there's no former and there's no latter, if time is completely in your hands, you're able to undo that which was done in the past. I always say you have to stop and benching. Nodelecho, second breath and benching. Nodelecho. We thank you, Hashem Elokeinu, for what we thank him. Al Shein Chalto Lam Nesenu Eretz Chemda Tovar Chava. He gave our fathers a great big broad land. Fellowship to Solomon and Zion. And he took us out of Egypt. Al Brisho Shechusanto Zarenu and the Bris of Milan. Al Torosho Shem Maritonu and Torah that you taught us to understand that brother is so out of chronological order, it's unbelievable. You say it, I don't know how many times every day. It's out of chronological order. But you know what? That's not bad at all. Because you know what we're saying? Nodelecho is the bracha of Eretz Yisrael. We thank you for having given us Eretz Yisrael. Everything else led up to it. The promise and guarantee for Eretz Yisrael was given by Bris Milah to Avraham Avinu. We had to receive Torah at Sinai before we entered Eretz Yisrael. God had to take us out of Egypt. So you know what Nodelecho is saying? Nodelecho is saying is the ultimate goal. The latter is what determined all of the events that follow. Everything that came before was really determined. The Rebbe wants to give clients to Eretz Yisrael. They need Bris Milah, they need Torah. We have to take them out of Mitzrayim. That's how the bracha is supposed to be understood. That's why I would say that Yom HaKippurim, Yom Kippur is a day like Purim. Why is it like Purim? That's a strange thing that's said by the Chachmei HaKabbalah. You understand, the most frivolous day of the year is Purim.
the most solemn day of the year is Yom Kippur. And Chacham Kabbalah say, you want to know what Yom Kippur is, the essence of Yom Kippur? It's like Purim. What does that mean? Of course it's like Purim. Because tshuva helps on Yom Kippur. You know why tshuva helps on Yom Kippur? Because it's a day like Purim. Purim is the V'nafoho, which tells us that Jewish history does not work chronologically. It doesn't work linearly. It works by virtue of what the ultimate goal and objective is. Right? Which means the following. We began this year by asking, couldn't the Rebbeinu Shel Olam have come up with a more inspiring and powerful message to the Jewish people in his first communication to them than HaChodesh HaZelachem Rosh Chodoshim, this astronomic and mathematical calculation of how the moon moves around the sun? So an hour later, I don't think that the kash exists anymore. Because ultimately, HaChodesh HaZelachem, the first message that God gives to the Jewish people is, Chevra, you're an eternal people. You are not going to follow in the footsteps of the history of the nations of the world. As of Chodesh Nisan, your history is qualitatively different. A revolution is going to take place in your thought because your history is not going to be evolutionary, going from cause to effect. Your history is going to be revolutionary, and therefore, when you reach the lowest point of all, the ashes of Auschwitz, the lowest point of all, you're going to be able to achieve the beginning of the greatest peak of all. The fossil is going to come to life and establish a state. Establish a state. Because that's Jewish history. Jewish history does not follow the pattern of all other history. So maybe you know what the nation is really telling them? What I said at the beginning. Od Avinu Chai, Am Yisrael Chai. That's the message of HaChodesh HaZelachem. Okay.